Welcome everyone to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at the Score. Appreciate you downloading and listening to the show today. This is always a fun episode to do after the NFL draft, because I know some people like to start their dynasty rookie drafts this week. So I made sure I got the rookie rankings updated on Sunday, and then I did a full sweep of the dynasty trade value charts for rookies and for veterans and for picks, including a new table with the 2025 rookie picks in there. So that's all up over at the Score for you, and I'll have updated 2024 redraft rankings out on Wednesday. But today, I want to give you my insights on these rookie drafts, go over my rankings broken down into tiers, and let you know what I'm seeing in some of the drafts I'm in right now, and some of the takeaways that I've seen from just overall ADP the last few days. And we'll do that for the first two rounds, so the first 24 picks. I don't have them broken down into actual tiers in the rookie rankings, but I have the dynasty values next to their name, so you can pretty easily tell who I'm valuing close to each other and who has a big gap between them and all that sort of stuff. And I will stress, the tiers are really, really important in these drafts, because if you're in there and you see, let's say, three players are left in a specific tier, all guys that you'd be happy to get, then you can move around the board and find edges, right? Either by moving back and adding picks or players and still getting somebody in that tier, or you move up and you get the last player in a tier and you maximize value that way, or at least perceived value, right? We're making educated projections on what these rookies could be. Nobody's perfect at this stuff. I mean, not even NFL evaluators are perfect at this, but keep the tiers and the values in mind when we're going through all of these, because I think that's how you get the most out of these rookie drafts. All right, no surprises at the top. Caleb Williams, he's in a tier of his own for me. I've seen a lot of people talking about how Marvin Harrison Jr. has actually gone as the 101 in some Superflex drafts, actually in quite a few Superflex drafts. I have yet to see that in any of mine. I get the draw for it, though. If you're already set at quarterback, maybe you want to try to lock down a potential top 10 wideout. But I see a tier break between the two in Superflex. In single QB, that's definitely Harrison as the 101 with Neighbors close behind. But in Superflex, it's Caleb Williams 101, especially now that he got Roma Dunze joining the already beefed up offensive weapons in Chicago. Then it's Harrison at 102. I love the landing spot for him. He's got a path to massive volume in Arizona. You add the pedigree that he has, the top four draft capital, the talent, the college production. He's as close to a can't-miss wide receiver prospect as there is. And then right after him, we have Jaden Daniels as the 103 and Malik Nabers as the 104. I would be willing to take these two in whatever order you prefer. For Daniels, he's going to hit the ground running. I mean, literally, he's going to be a prolific rushing quarterback from day one. And that's going to make him a potential top 12 fantasy QB right away. So he certainly warrants a top four pick in rookie drafts. And so does Neighbors, who I know a lot of people are a little bit down on him just because didn't get as good of a landing spot as Harrison did. But Neighbors still going to see a ton of volume. Hopefully the quarterback situation in New York does get figured out at some point, either because Neighbors comes in and helps write that offense and Daniel Jones gets on track. I mean, remember, it wasn't that long ago before last season when the vibe around Brian Daboll and that offense was pretty positive. Then the wheels came off during the year. He had injuries to Jones, and more importantly, he had a bunch of injuries on that offensive line in front of him. So some better health for the blockers. Now having Neighbors there is a real threat in the passing game. We should see some improvement from that Giants attack. And Neighbors, just 20 years old, turns 21 this summer. That means you're getting an impressive rookie talent who still has room to grow. I'm a huge fan of Neighbors, so much so that I'll tell you a quick story here. I moved up a few weeks ago from 106 to 104 in one of my rookie drafts. I'm not going to mention any names here. It is an analyst league, but I won't say who was involved in any of these trades. But I'll give you a real life example of how you need to adapt in your draft. So I move up from 106 to 104 because I expected that it was going to be Caleb, Daniels, and Harrison go off the board. I even spoke to the guy who had the number two pick. He told me he'd likely be taking a QB because he needed one. And then draft day comes around and he goes Harrison at the 102. That meant Neighbors went third. And now I'm sitting there with just Daniels left in that top tier. I already have four strong quarterbacks on that team. I was already looking to move one of them. So even though I had moved up to the 104, I started working the chats. I started fielding some offers. And I ended up turning the 104 into Kyren Williams and T. Higgins. And I think that's because the manager who had Kyren, I think the Blake Corum pick scared him a little bit. And maybe he's worried about Higgins' future, right? Given the franchise tag and the trade request, and maybe because the Bengals drafted Jermaine Burton. I don't know, but I was happy to take that haul on a team that I think can contend this year. And I'll just say, I'm not as worried as some about that Kyren Corum dynamic. I think Kyren proved himself last year. Sean McVay loves him. As long as he stays healthy, Kyren is the guy in that backfield. Corum had a dip in some of his metrics coming off the injuries last year in college. And McVay said in his post-draft press conference, he said that the two guys have overlapping skill sets, which leads me to believe that Corum is more insurance in case Kyren gets injured and, you know, somebody who can take a little bit of the load off him. But Corum isn't taking his job. He's there for relief duty. He's there to give the Rams some depth, which they certainly didn't have last year, right? They had to lean on Ronnie Rivers and they had to bring in guys off the street like Royce Freeman and Daryl Henderson. Now Corum's a solid backup. He's the same age as Kyren too. So give me the guy who already produced a big season in the NFL and who's the same age as his new incoming rookie teammate. And then for Higgins, he's got one more year with Burrow. Then he's likely gone. Yeah, they're not really talking about a new contract with him. Apparently all those talks have stalled, but he might end up as the number one on his new team next year. So even if the quarterback play isn't as good as it is with Burrow, which isn't for sure, but there's only a few passers in the league who are equal or better than Burrow. So Higgins could see more volume in 2025 and beyond if he can get a number one role somewhere else. I'm happy to take a chance on him. I like him as the number two in Cincy if he stays there. And if he goes somewhere else, I'll roll the dice. So regardless, I just point all that out to say that you have to be willing to pivot. I went into my draft with one plan. I quickly had to adjust and it worked out pretty well for me. And now I have two veteran stars that I didn't even know that they were on the table before all of this. So let's get back on track here. So Caleb 101 in his own tier, Harrison 102 in his own tier as well, just given the better landing spot than Neighbors. Daniels and Neighbors, they're 103, 104. They make up that third tier. And then it gets interesting. Now, I have two more quarterbacks making up the next tier. That's 105 and 106. And for me, it's JJ McCarthy first and then Drake May. And talent-wise, May might actually have the better fantasy ceiling. He's got more rushing upside, but he lands in New England. And that makes him a little more of a worry just to produce early in his career. I'm not as confident he's going to be able to do that. And they don't really have the infrastructure there that you can get excited about. Now, McCarthy, he goes to Minnesota. There aren't many teams in the NFL that have a better supporting cast on offense than the Vikings. You have Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson when he's healthy, Aaron Jones. The line is good. The coaching's strong. I mean, Kevin O'Connell's system just produces for quarterbacks. So McCarthy, he gets the nod over May, but it is pretty close. Then I have Roma Dunze in his own tier at 107. The Bears offense, yes, it's a little bit crowded, but you have a 32-year-old Keenan Allen who just could be a one-year rental. And I think there's a strong chance that Allen might end up playing a lot of slot snaps this year. And if that happens, we could see a Dunze rise quicker than expected because the Bears might try to maximize Allen's reps by using him in the slot, right? At the later stages of his career here, maybe you don't want him lining up as much as he did with the Chargers. And everybody who wants to point to offensive coordinator Shane Waldron's time with the Seahawks, I know a lot of people are making the connection. Well, he had Jaxon Smith-Njigba last year and he was underutilized. So now Odunze this year is going to be underutilized. There's no guarantee that Odunze is going to fall into that same kind of role that Jaxon Smith-Njigba had last year. It could be Allen's numbers that drop because I don't think he's going to get the same kind of volume that he got in LA. So Odunze might not come out of the gates like Harrison and Neighbors. And talent-wise, I never thought he was on their level, but he's going to be a strong NFL receiver, and I like him as the 107. After that, Xavier Worthy, he's getting bumped up by landing spot. You have to do it. The Chiefs, they trade up to get him in the first round. You have decent draft capital. You attach him to Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. It's hard not to like him more than we did before the draft, but we've seen guys get overvalued in this spot before with Kansas City, whether it was Mecole Hardman or Sky Moore or Clyde Edwards-Helaire, even though he's a running back. I think Worthy has a better chance than all those guys did to produce in the NFL. I just think we're going to see him be a little more boom or bust, and he's super fast. He is very small, though. Still, he could turn in. They've compared him to potentially like a DeSean Jackson type, right? Which isn't bad for fantasy, but you just need to know what you're getting there. So Worthy for me stands alone now as the 108 because of that landing spot. Then we have a big tier next. You have Brian Thomas Jr., Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey, Jonathan Brooks, and Bo Nix from 109 to 201. I've seen these guys go off the board in a variety of ways. I talked about all of them on the shows over the weekend, so you can go back and listen to those episodes. Thomas Jr., got a chance to become Trevor Lawrence's number one receiver, though I don't expect that's going to happen right away. I think he's going to be more of a field stretcher in year one. You have Gabe Davis kind of doing the same thing, and that's going to allow Christian Kirk and Evan Engram to really eat underneath. Bowers, he's a future star. He's an outstanding tight end prospect, but the landing spot in Vegas, it might make it pretty tough for him to put up big numbers right away. You have Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell are going to throw the ball there this year. Who's going to win that camp battle? And you also have Devontae Adams and Jacoby Myers taking big target shares in that offense. So I would remind people that Bowers has a chance to be a slot guy. They can deploy him like a receiver. They can still use Michael Mayer at tight end. So it's going to be an interesting offense, but quarterback play could hold them back a bit, and it could hold down Bowers' value. So that's why he's dropped a little bit in my rankings. Ladd McConkey, now he is somebody that I am ending up with a lot of. I love the skills. I love the athleticism. The fact that he went to a team that is so desperate for a number one pass catcher, and Jim Harbaugh, Greg Roman, they're going to run the ball a lot. So the pass volume is not going to be there. But McConkey can emerge as Justin Herbert's unquestioned top target, and he's going to be able to earn enough as that main guy in this offense to be able to produce. And I really love him at the end of the first round or even beginning of the second round. He is such a steal in that range. Jonathan Brooks. Now, this one's a little tougher. I really like the talent, and he was delivering before his injury this year, but that torn ACL, it complicates things, right? He should be ready early in the season, at least. Some people are saying in the summer before the season, but I never want to assume that. There's always going to be overly positive reports about guys' recovery, especially when you have a rookie coming in. That can be an issue, right? He could miss valuable reps in OTAs, maybe even training camp too, if he's not 100% yet. So if he can regain his form, yes, he can be a top 24 fantasy back moving forward, a top 20 dynasty back as well. But his value, it might drop initially if he's not 100% to start the season, or if that delays his rise up the depth chart. So I've seen him go as early as 107 in my Superflex drafts. I've also seen him go as late as 202. So a wide range there for Brooks, but I like him as a late first or very early second round pick in rookie drafts. And then rounding out this tier, Bo Nix. I've said it before, I am not a huge fan. I worry about how this is all going to work out in the NFL for him, but he's a quarterback who was taken 12th overall in the NFL draft, and that kind of draft capital, it's got to boost his dynasty outlook. And quarterbacks, they can often hold their value early in their career in terms of dynasty. Even if they falter a bit as a rookie, they still can maintain that value. So you could trade them away if you don't like what you're seeing early on. And Nix tends to go late first round. For me, he is the 201 there, meaning I'm not getting that much of him. And I'm okay with that. But if you do need a quarterback, I think you got to get him in the late first round. Now, that's it for the guys who I feel comfortable drafting. There's still a bunch of players that I like out there, but they do have a little more risk in their profiles. So when we get into the second round, we drop to another tier here, but we also have to acknowledge that the hit rate on these players, it's going to be lower most years. But the next tier is two players, Keon Coleman and Trey Benson. They're the 202 and the 203 in my ranks, are 14th and 15th, if you prefer to go about it that way. I'm just trying to associate it with the value in your drafts. And Coleman isn't a prospect that I was particularly drawn to in the pre-draft process, but he gets good draft capital as the 33rd pick, goes to a situation with Josh Allen and the Bills where he's going to have a chance to carve out a big role immediately, maybe filling that Stephon Diggs void. And I should say they're very different players. This isn't a one-for-one swap here, so keep that in mind. But Coleman, 20 years old, he's going to be 21 in May, so there's a lot of room for growth in his game. And the Bills are going to need to see more than what they saw in college, right? If he's going to become that number one or number two pass catcher in Buffalo, they are going to need to see improvement. But there's enough here to chase that potential early in the second round. And Benson, he is a good back, definitely behind Brooks in my rookie RB rankings, but he profiles as a future three-down back in the NFL. I love the landing spot with the Cardinals. You have a promising young offense. You have a lead back in James Conner, who's turning 29 in May. He's got durability issues, so you're almost guaranteed to get, I would say, at least a couple starts out of Benson during his rookie season. And if he can win the coaches over early, we might see that changing of the guard happen at some point in 2024. And Connor, I continue to say, he's a very underrated real life and fantasy asset. He's just getting up there. And the fact that Arizona made this move, it's a sign that they're preparing for life after Connor. So At worst, you might have to wait until 2025 for Benson to start, but my guess is that that time is going to come a lot sooner than people think, and he's got top 24 Dynasty RB upside as the eventual starter in this offense. We get to another really big tier after Benson. So from 204 to 208, it's Ricky Pearsall, A.D. Mitchell, Michael Penix Jr., Jalen Polk, and Xavier Leggett. And Pearsall, he's ready to jump into three receiver sets for the 49ers, but he's also the next man up if Debo or if Ayuk get traded, which might not happen this year now, but next season, 2025, we could see Pearsall as one of the top tier receivers in San Francisco. Mitchell, he's got wide receiver one skills. He could grow into that, but he's slated to be the number two or number three receiver in Indy alongside Michael Pittman and Josh Downs. Michael Penix, he's the future starting quarterback for the Falcons, but when that's going to happen, we don't really know. Likely not until 2026, I would say, at the earliest, unless Kirk Cousins suffers a bad injury. I've seen Penix sneak all the way up into the first round of some drafts. I think that's a little rich for me, but round two, I would consider him there as long as your build allows you to wait. Polk, he could be the new number one wideout for the Patriots, and that's a little more exciting these days with Drake May there. And then Xavier Leggett, he's going to try to win the number two job in Carolina behind Deontay Johnson. And I like the direction that that Panthers offense is going under Dave Canales. Still a lot to prove, though, for sure. So all those receivers, they have potential. You can see, though, there's uncertainty in each of their projections. And Penix, he would be a first-round rookie pick if Cousins wasn't in Atlanta. But he is. So you almost have to value Penix like a 2026 first rounder, which to me is worth a mid-second round pick in 2024. And then we can finish off the second round with our last tier that we're going to talk about today, 209 to 212, Jermaine Burton, Marshawn Lloyd, Jalen Wright, and Blake Corum. Burton gets a nice scenario with the Bengals. We talked about it a little bit earlier with T. Higgins. He can learn for a year. He can be the third receiver right now and then eventually take over for Higgins next season. And Burton was one of my favorite wideouts when I first watched everybody, but it just didn't seem like he had any buzz early in the process, so I kind of second-guessed myself. I know there's some stuff off-field with him as well that has to be considered, but I was glad to see him get day two draft capital, and now he's got a chance to carve out a pretty nice career in the pros with Joe Burrow. Another player, though, that you might have to wait on, which is kind of a theme in this tier, because the other three players, they're all running backs who went to teams that have clear starters at the moment. Lloyd, he can be a change of pace back behind Josh Jacobs before eventually taking over for him in a year or two. Wright, he's got the 4.38 speed, makes him another intriguing back in Miami, and he could easily form a really dangerous 1-2 punch with Devon Achane. Also, I mean, Achane wasn't the most durable back last year, so once Raheem Mostert's out of the picture, Wright could be a big part of this backfield, and he's got that home run hitting ability too, like every other Dolphins skill position player seems to have. And then Corum, we discussed him already, the Kyren Williams trade and what I thought about Corum. I see him as a solid backup. I think he's going to have a role, but I think it's as the clear second on the depth chart. I'll be surprised if he overtakes Kyren, barring any sort of injury. So that gives you an idea of how I'm approaching the first two rounds, some of the players that I like more than others. Hopefully you can use that when you're making picks this week or whenever your rookie draft starts up. And then on Thursday's show, I'm going to go over the players that I'm targeting outside of the first two rounds in rookie draft, some of the sleepers that you can stash or maybe that we could see even rise up in training camp and get an early role on their teams. But that is all for today's show. So make sure you check out my latest rookie rankings and the Dynasty Trade Value charts that are all updated over at The Score. And I'll have a new version of my 2024 redraft rankings out on Wednesday. I know I said I'd try to get them done for Tuesday. I need some more time with it, so Wednesday is what it's going to be. You can also go back in the meantime and listen to or read my thoughts on all the skill position players from day one or day two of the draft. Had a couple shows, had a couple articles, everything's covered in there. And now we get to start building towards the season. You know, there's still a few notable free agents out there, but not many. So I'm going to start working on all the fantasy draft kit content for The Score in the coming weeks. And we'll be going strong with the podcast now, including that next episode on Thursday. So until then, big thanks for following me on Twitter at Justin Boone. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening. See you next time.
Said leave on time, my baby. Said leave on time. Leave on time with me.